Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. This week we'll be doing our annual Oscar roundup, but first I want to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by St. Bonaventure University, which will be holding a special conference on the legacy of Thomas Merton called Coming Home and Going Forth, Merton as Mirror and Model. That'll be held from June 19th to 22nd, and for the full schedule and registration information, visit sbu.edu/Merton. This week I was joined by Bill McGarvey, an America editor-at-large, Father James Martin. Hello and welcome to the American Magazine podcast. We're joined for our annual Oscar podcast by Bill McGarvey and Father Jim Martin. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, we've got nine movies to go through here, and since Father Jim Martin has been busy writing a book, he's seen only a couple, so he's going to lead the discussion and ask us some questions. So go ahead, Father Jim.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd, thanks, Tim, I thought I'd lead off with the two that I've seen so we can get that out of the way, and those would be Dallas Buyers Club and Captain Phillips. Why don't we start off with Captain Phillips? It might be the one that most people have seen in the audience. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's the story of an American captain of a shipping vessel who is captured by a group of Somali pirates off the coast of the Horn of Africa in East Africa. What did you think about it, Tim?
It was a Paul Greengrass film, so, you know, it shared, what was it, Bloody Sunday he did about those events in Ireland. He also did the 9/11 movie, That Flight. So it has that documentary feel, and so that it's always very engaging to watch. The thing I found most interesting about it, and I'd be interested in Bill's thoughts, is kind of what he has to say about, you know, American. There's a little bit of a commentary there about American consumerism. This is a big ship that, you know, is carrying all these products to the United States, and then you have the poor people coming from Somalia who have nothing. And he says it to him at one point, said, you know, couldn't you have done something else with your life? And he's like, maybe if I lived in America, but not here, not in Somalia.
No, I'd forgotten it was Paul Greengrass who had done Flight, what was it, 9/11?
Flight 93. Flight 93.
Is that the one? I think I saw that with you, Jim, and Jim actually left the theater.
Oh, that's
it was such a brutal film to watch. Not unlike, honestly, another film on here, 12 Years a Slave, that we'll get to a little later. It was also very tough to watch, but well done. Actually, I was really surprised at how much I liked Captain Phillips, an awful lot. It kind of goes to show that Tom Hanks can really soften a lot of things in a way that's good. I thought it was... I thought he did a great job. Of course, the Somali pirates, who are the supporting actors, are getting a lot of attention, and rightfully so. I have to admit, the little side of me that wanted to be a Marine when I was a kid definitely has a bit of a fascination with these Navy SEALs who have appeared in a bunch of movies lately, who are surgically intense and how good they are, what they do. I thought it was a really well-told story. I thought it was... Of course, I was fascinated to read afterwards about some of the controversy surrounding Captain Phillips and the crew, but I thought it was really well done. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near, for me, a best picture, you know, close to the best picture, but I think it's certainly one of the movies on here, more than some of them, that I think is absolutely worth seeing, and it was one I was super surprised at how much I liked it.
Yeah, I'd spent some time in East Africa a while ago, and I worked with a lot of Somali refugees, and I thought it was interesting that they used actual Somalis who had lived in the United States. And it was sort of a lot of verisimilitude in terms of the Somali villages that they came from and the poverty. And I thought, as Tim was saying, that was a good, just an addition to the movie. It strained credulity for me that they were having these kind of conversations about culture. Yeah. You know, when the guy has a gun to his head, it just seemed they both seemed, you know, both parties, Captain Phillips and the Somali pirates, seemed a little too articulate about, you know, kind of cultural differences and things like that. I like Tom Hanks. I found him a little too saintly in this. I mean, he has the right comment for every occasion. But, you know, it held my interest, and I'd forgotten how he was rescued. So, you know, it turns into a kind of, you know, a kind of thriller at the end. And I found that kind of compelling. So, Best Picture, I'm not sure about that.
It's a very good point, by the way. It did at times feel like a multicultural class going on in a conversation. I wonder if that was anywhere near what the reality was. I haven't read anything about the actual kidnapping or what it was like. But
well, I was thinking, like, those conversations are hard enough to have, you know, without someone having a gun to your head and having taken over a ship. We'll move on to Dallas Buyers Club. I found this fascinating. I also found it incredibly almost hard to believe, but of course it's based on a true story. It's Matthew McConaughey as a guy who contracts the AIDS virus or the HIV virus, and then basically because of sort of being prevented from by FDA regulations to get drugs, goes on his own and gets drugs for himself and then from other people from Mexico. Is that right?
Yes.
he was, I was just fascinated by him. I mean, Matthew McConaughey is this, you know, former kind of, you know, leading man, and he transformed himself into this kind of low life, and he was really convincing, as was Jared Leto, I guess you say, or Leto, who is this transvestite. It was very, I found it very compelling. In the end, I also found it quite depressing. I mean, it's very dark. But Matthew McConaughey, I mean, boy, you know, who knew in terms of his acting? It was very impressive. What do you think, Bill?
I absolutely agree. I have to admit, I often am not an enormous fan of Matthew McConaughey. In fact, he's in another film we're going to talk about, Wolf of Wall Street, that I was far more what I usually expect from him. There's a scene in this movie where he's driving along and he finally breaks down knowing that he's got this deadly virus. And it's the best scene I've ever seen him do. He's incredibly emaciated for this role. And he looks the part. And what it brings back is, for anybody who was aware enough to read a newspaper in the 1980s, we forget what this was like. And it really brings home what an absolute death sentence this was and what a complete pariah it made you in the world. And it really is sort of shocking you back to that world. I thought it was a really well-done movie. And it really was the first time I really thought, geez, Matthew McConaughey, although Mud was very good, but Matthew McConaughey in this movie was definitely the best thing. Again, not something that I would think would win Best Picture, but it was absolutely worth the $12, whatever we're paying in Manhattan now, $14 for entrance.
Yeah, I was surprised how much I liked. I mean, I knew the story going in, and I had read enough reviews that I felt like I kind of knew what I was going to see. Mm-hmm. But what surprised me most about it was just the style of it. The directing, I thought, was very interesting and good. Even the way it starts, you're not sure where you are. You're in like the rodeo pen, and it's kind of ugly, and it's not heavy-handed the way they tell this story. I mean, this is a story that could have easily been, you know, given the Hollywood treatment and been kind of schmaltzy, but it's pretty rough around the edges, and it doesn't kind of shy away from the dark side of this story. And the fact that it's telling the story of this, you know, homophobe who, you know, has no time for, you know, gay culture and I don't know. I was surprised how much I liked it.
Now, not having seen any of the other ones, because I've been writing my book, Jesus at Pilgrimage, on sale on March 11th.
You've been spending time with Jesus.
That's okay. Right. I've been spending time with Jesus. I am kind of interested, having read about all these movies, I'm very interested in what you both think. I am most interested, frankly, in The Wolf of Wall Street, where Leonardo DiCaprio plays, is it Beltran? Is that the person's
Jordan
name?
Jordan Belfour.
Belfour, there you go. Yeah. You know, as sort of, shall we say, profligate trader on Wall Street. And I think the big controversy, I'm curious what you both think, is that some people say that Martin Scorsese actually has kind of glorified the excesses of this Wall Street type. And others say that he's trying to provide a social critique. Now, interestingly, that's the same critique of Goodfellas. You know, is he glorifying the mob or is he, you know, providing a critique? So, maybe we'll start with you, Tim. Do you think it was sort of, was there a sufficient distance for the viewer to kind of get a sense of this being a critique?
Well, it didn't. I mean, I could see how some people could come out of that film and say, you know, there wasn't a lot of criticism of this lifestyle. I mean, he doesn't get the traditional kind of Hollywood. There's not this Hollywood fall at the end. Yes, he goes to jail, but for a limited period, it ends with him giving his spiel to a group of, I guess, somebody at some conference. So he's still, you know, doing what he's always done. You know, maybe he doesn't quite have the same amount of money as done. So I can see how some people think this is just a glorification of that lifestyle. I do like what our reviewer Jim McDermott said, which is that if Last Temptation of Christ was kind of his meditation on Jesus in heaven, this is his meditation on in hell. And what he's saying here is that hell is not someplace where it's very obvious who the devil is. The devil is going to be attractive, and this lifestyle is kind of attractive in some ways, but it also can lead to some very bad things. And I mean, his marriage breaks up, and so it's not like you come out of it, you know, I didn't come out of it thinking this is a lifestyle I want to emulate in any way, you know, thank God.
Jim McDermott is wrong. Let me just go on record as saying that. He's a friend. I served with him in Congress, but Jim McDermott is, I am a huge fan of Martin Scorsese, and what Jim said at the outset of this conversation about it is absolutely dead on. I was angry at the film because Goodfellas, you're dealing, first of all, with criminals, the criminal world, and we all have a fascination with that. And these guys, there's a certain, you know, fraternal sort of sense to that that's kind of interesting and fun. Raging Bull as well, some real low-life characters. The difference in this is that the victims in Goodfellas is Lufthansa, and while it's a, you know, it's a corporation, and you could argue that that's clearly a crime and it's wrong. In Wolf of Wall Street, really, essentially, the character goes from being a creep to being an enormous creep, and the arc, and you never get the sense that there's ever any sort of moral underpinnings. You never see the victims here. You never see, and I've actually since then seen Jordan Balfour on Piers Morgan, and while I'm sure who can tell what's in his heart, I just found it really disconcerting how it feels like this is not a man who maybe has learned anything, you know. And it's a real rare misstep for me for Martin Scorsese. I don't buy that. If it's hell, you know, it certainly looked like, you know, just an over the top party to me, you know. And I was teasing. Obviously, Jim McDermott's a smart guy, but I disagree.
Well, and also it's interesting. You have this guy who's, you know, supposed to be chasing, but he's on Piers Morgan, and he has Martin Scorsese making a movie about his life.
Right.
So, and it's kind of like the ultimate accolade. I'm also very interested in what you think about Philomena. Did you want to say?
Something just one more comment. I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's caused quite a conversation around these very issues, but. I thought also, as a piece of filmmaking, first of all, I was shocked by the material. I mean, even knowing going into it, there's a lot of sex and drugs and rock and roll and all that stuff. Right. But the way, I had to remind myself this was, Martin Scorsese, a 70-year-old man making this movie. And it had a lot of, you know, you may not approve of the subject matter, but as a piece of filmmaking, it had a lot of energy. And it felt newer to me than some of his recent films.
Very true. But can I just make one last comment? As much as I think Jonah Hill is really amazing, I'm surprised at the level he's getting these Oscar nominations for these roles. It's not that he's a great actor, but I'm not seeing the power. Even Moneyball, which is a good movie, I'm not understanding.
I mean, I will say DiCaprio, who I've not generally been in love with, I thought in this movie was very good. So.
I would say that Wall Street, when I worked at GE, was exactly like that. So Philomena also is getting a lot of controversy. It stars Judi Dench as a woman whose child is given into foster care into a group of nuns. Steve Coogan is a crusading journalist, is that right, that is writing about the story. Now, the big question I think our readers will want to know is this... Or is this not anti-Catholic? Is it a film about forgiveness, or is it a kind of anti-Catholic screed?
We'll let Bill weigh in.
It's a real gem of a film. I know people say that sort of thing a lot. It's just a small movie, really beautifully done. Steve Coogan, who isn't as famous over here as he is over in England for, the Alan Partridge show?
Alan Partridge,
And was it Anglo-Sat? He's just great and funny. And I guess he was the impetus behind this movie based on an article... I think in one of the London papers.
It's a book, too.
It's clearly, you can come away from it with a real strong sense of criticism of the church on one level, but I think to simplify it to being just simply that would be a mistake, really, because it's honestly a beautiful tale of these two poles. He's this sort of hardened journalist who wants a story, and she's this woman who lived this very, very difficult reality, and how she comes to her sort of understanding of what would happen to her and to her son. And versus him and vis-a-vis the church, it's a very powerful tale of forgiveness over a lifetime. So yeah, the church doesn't come off to me as hugely heroic here, and yet the members of the church do in many ways. So I think it's a beautiful movie and absolutely worth it, every minute you spend in a theater with it.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, you know, you have to think about, okay, what is the church's message? Is it about preserving the image of the church as, you know, kind of unblemished, or is it about the story of the gospel and about our call to forgiveness? If that's what we believe it is, that's what this movie's about. You know, the church itself might not come off very well, but the message of the church comes off very strongly.
Absolutely. I can't see how you argue that. I mean, it's a sensitive topic, but it's reality. I know people who actually were children adopted out of Ireland from that generation. So it's a powerful story, and I would recommend everybody to see it.
Well, the question is, are all the nuns portrayed as... bad, or
there's one in particular is particularly villainous.
Well, that's, you know, you could have one, but are they all portrayed?
No, I mean, to be honest, they're very kind. And when she comes back in the modern era, I know there's been a lot of controversy around these Magdalene sisters in Ireland. I don't know anything about them really beyond what I've read here and there. But no, it's not one big huge slam on women religious. I don't think.
It's an interesting, too. Steve Coogan, I grew up in a Catholic family. I don't think he's a believer now, but it's obviously something he's still struggling with, because these conversations that he wrote with Philomena are obviously reflective of his own struggles. And he talks about his parents, like, took in foster children. They're obviously good people. And I think you see that reflected in it's a certain tribute to a kind of faith, a person who is a real believer, maybe not an intellectual, but is nonetheless very holy in some way.
Well, all right, on to another very difficult topic, slavery as portrayed in 12 Years a Slave. You know, I've read so much about these movies, I have the big questions. Yes. I want to ask. So the question I want to ask for 12 Years a Slave, which is based on a true story, is actually this. Is it formulaic? I have heard one of the critiques has been that, two critiques. One is that it's too gruesome, which strikes me as kind of odd, given that it's slavery and you want to portray it realistically. But the other critique I heard was that it was kind of formulaic in the sense that, well, we have this episode that, you know, right. You kind of expect in a slave movie, then this episode, and then this episode.
Or the mean
episode.
Master.
Yeah, know. And then on the other hand, people said, well, this is the true story, and so right. If it's formulaic, that's... So what did you think? Was it... Did it hold your interest in that sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bill mentioned it is a hard movie to watch. It is a movie I'd watch again, because I think it's very well done. And it does shock you. You realize, you know, I've seen a lot of movies about slavery, but none of them made me feel as kind of... complicit, or at least in the way that this movie does. It makes you seem like it doesn't seem so far away. It seems like, oh my God, this was 150 years ago, and it's, you know, it's pretty ugly. And there's a fine line between, and I think this director in the past, this is Steve McQueen, I believe, has been criticized being a little too artsy about some certain episodes. Like, he did the movie about Bobby Sands, and some people thought that was a little too artsy in the way he presented that hunger strike story. In this way, I mean, he does dwell a little bit on the images of the lashed backs and such. So he take, but it has more of a documentary feel, like he's just telling the story. But I thought it was very effective. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture now. I think it's too dark. But I think it'll be a movie that's going to really stand the test of time.
I honestly think it should win Best Picture. I'm interested. It's interesting that somebody says it's formulaic. I mean, it's based on an account from a person who lived through slavery, was a free man who actually was captured into slavery, and doesn't seem all that different from a lot of accounts that you would have read from the time, like Frederick Douglass, et cetera. It seems like, and the notion where there were, you know, but I thought it was fascinating in the sense of getting an inside glimpse of obviously the horrors of it, but also some of the economy and the society around it. Even some of the masters, some of the slave owners had black wives, essentially, who were mistresses of the plantation. And then there was also one powerful scene in particular when the main character is lashed, hanging from a tree with his hands. And they just meditate on this shot for a long time. Steve McQueen did a movie called Shame that, if you haven't seen it, is a very difficult movie, but very powerful. And there's this amazing long shot where, essentially, after this horrible thing has happened, he's near death, you just see the rest of the people in the slave quarters. Yeah. Life just goes on. And it's like nothing happened. And it's a very powerful sort of meditation on everybody's complicity and to be able to become completely inured to that sort of pain. Very, very. I don't know if I could see it again, but it's a powerful, powerful film.
I guess one of the other criticisms is that this was all made. This was by a British director. The actors were not American, so it was sort of like the British waving their finger at us a little bit.
We're going to move from a dark topic to actually dark physical space and talk about Gravity.
Nice segue.
Thank you. Alfonso Cuarón, one of my favorite directors, Y Tu Mama Tambien, and also by two actors that I think a lot of people have often dismissed as kind of lightweight, even though Sandra Bullock has won an Oscar. And I think, did George Clooney win an Oscar?
She's literally lightweight in this movie.
So, you know, here are these two people, two of our most popular actors, taking on very difficult and kind of dark role. What did you think of the movie?
As a piece of filmmaking, you know, I was impressed with the, you know, it takes all place in space. It's it's 90 minutes, so it's a compressed tale, well told. I thought the story itself, it was a little more cliche than I was expecting. You know, there are certain elements they introduce, like she has a daughter who's died. And I don't know, it seems a little bit, I don't know, a little mawkish at times, So I wasn't as impressed by the story. As a piece of filmmaking, I thought it was very impressive. But I didn't think it was one of the top films of this list.
It's funny. I think when it came out, I remember there was such a buzz around it. It's such a monumental filmmaking sort of exercise, I think, because of how they made it feel. And there is this amazing sort of sense of absolute emptiness and loneliness to this vast void. I thought it was a good movie. I agree that it would not be my favorite. I thought there was a point where it felt relentless. But I have to say, Sandra Bullock, you know, more and more, I take her more and more seriously. She's, you know, she's did a good job. And George Clooney does what he does well. He's charming and funny, and he's sort of a scoundrel of sorts. I have a feeling the story behind how they made the film in terms of just the mechanics or the technology behind it is probably as interesting as the film. Well, maybe not as interesting, but it's a powerful film, but it's not one of my favorites of the year.
It's interesting that Alfonso Cuarón, his big movie, Y Tu Mamá También, is this very kind of simple movie, kind of a road movie, and as you were saying, he takes it now into this kind of like technical side. All right, on to... You know, I found the movie Her really fascinating. I haven't seen it, but the premise is really interesting. Scarlett Johansson is the voice of the operating system on a new computer for Joaquin Phoenix's character, and he falls in love with her or her voice. It's Spike Jonze's movie. He's fascinating. And it would seem to me a very difficult concept to sort of bring to fruition. So do you think it was successful, Bill?
Yes. In a word, yes. I think it was one of the more unsettling films I've seen in a while, only because it's set in the near future and you can imagine this happening. And there is a real, Spike Jonze did a great job of making me feel at least, wow, there is actual relationship going on here with this artificial intelligence. What it turns on later in the film about why the relationship runs into trouble, I thought was also a fascinating sort of statement. I don't want to give it away, but Spike Jonze films like...
He directed some of those Charlie Kaufman films,
Charlie Kaufman
being John Malkovich.
Adaptation. Yeah. I find often very blank, to be honest with you. And I thought, but this was actually had more of a heart than it usually did. And his ex-wife, Sofia Coppola's movies, Lost in Translation, also there's a blankness to this filmmaking. And I think this is at least scratching at, there's still a blankness here. There's a real sort of emptiness to the films, I think, this film, in the sense of the world around these characters, and the sort of a coldness in a clinical sense. But I think it's a well-done movie, creepy. I'm sure a lot of people didn't like it, but I found it really creepy, and in that sense, I thought creepy in the sense of unsettling, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it was unsettling. It was science fiction, but not really, because it doesn't seem so far away from where we are now. And it's really understated. As you said, it's a very quiet movie. I really had to kind of listen to hear to pull it off, these conversations are happening between him and, you know, and his iPhone, essentially. And they do pull it off, partly because Scarlett Johansson has a real... You know it's Scarlett Johansson talking, so she has some personality in her voice. But, you know, it's a tale about human relationships, and can human relationships exist at a time, you know, when we have all these digital connections? And the way the movie ends, I won't give it away, but it's suggesting that we need to kind of put away our iPhones and connect with other people. And certainly seems to me in keeping with what, for example, Pope Francis said about the internet, that we can't let it kind of take over our lives.
Pope Francis likes Her. Now, here's another movie about connections. Nebraska stars a 1970s icon, Bruce Dern. It's kind of a comeback late in his acting career. And also done by one of my favorite directors, Alexander Payne, who I have to say sort of contractually went to a Jesuit high school.
Creighton Prep.
Out in Omaha. And, he's just very creative. Did Sideways, most people will know that, as well as a number of other movies. Election. Masterpiece. Now, the critique I heard about this movie is that Bruce Dern's character is kind of hard to relate to because he's a little, I guess he's old, and is he struggling with Alzheimer's, is that right, and a little dementia?
It's not clear. It seems to be some sort of incipient dementia.
Was this a movie that was able to draw you in, Tim?
It was a slow movie, but yes, I did like it. It set a certain spell. I mean, what part of it is just the cinematography. It's black and white. The plains in Nebraska. This is the first time he's actually, as I understand, election took place in Nebraska, but this is, I mean, he called it Nebraska.
About Schmidt, too. A lot of his stuff does, yeah.
But he goes home for this film, but the fact he calls it Nebraska is telling you something, that he's he's doing something about his home. And I know, I have some relatives in-laws who have family in Nebraska, and they said this is very true to what small-town life is like, maybe with fewer F-bombs, but... But I'd be interested in your take, Bill. I mean, it's dark in terms of, like, the family's relationships, but it seems to slowly build to kind of a moment of connection between the son and the father, Will Forte. And it takes a while, but it gets there, and I think because it takes some time, it's pretty effective.
I mean, it's shot in black and white, for those who haven't seen it, shot in black and white in Nebraska, in the wintertime, frozen, overcast, depressing. It's like New York. It sounds like New York or Gravity, whatever. Pick your film this, right. this crop.
They got the Caribbean space.
Of course, you know, Bruce Dern. Actually, I didn't like Nebraska that much, and I'm a big Alexander Payne fan. I thought About Schmidt was great. I thought Election was brilliant. I think Bruce Dern is getting a lot of attention, rightfully so, because he's a great actor and this is a great role. But I also wonder if this film doesn't have a bit of a sense of where you're coming to the film from. I was sort of, I think there's some more. Will Forte does a good job as well. June Squibb does a nice job, although I'm not sure.
He plays her wife.
His
right?
wife, yeah. Yeah, his wife. The two cousins were the funniest, yeah, the best part of the movie for me. But I felt sort of nonplussed by it. But then my uncle, who's in his 70s, he said he went to see it. And I kind of thought, boy, that's a dark film to see. He loved it. He thought it was funny as all get out. So I'm wondering if, from a certain perspective, somebody from a certain age might see, as somebody who's sort of, and my uncle is completely sharp and he's in great shape and he's actually an America reader, so hopefully he hears this podcast. But I thought, wow, that is really a different take from a different vantage point in life that I thought was maybe a certain generation would see it as kind of an older person sort of, you know, cri de coeur of like for meaning when you're sort of old and passed over in some ways.
Well, our last film is, I think, the one that I've read the most positive reviews about, which is American Hustle. I read one review, I think it was in The New Yorker, that said that each of the actors does their best. I mean, each of the actors is kind of like at the top of their game.
And they were all nominated, again, like Silver Linings, too. It was the same, yeah, four actors.
It's, as most people know, it's loosely based, it's probably, I don't know if Bill remembers this, it's loosely based on the ab scam.
Jim, you're much older.
There you go, which I actually remember.
Very
loosely based. And I haven't heard too much critique of this film, just that people loved it. I hear it can be a little people were upset of the liberties it took, and they thought the ab scam case was sort of interesting enough that he didn't have to kind of take liberties. So what did you think, Bill, as a Philadelphian?
This is the film that Martin Scorsese should have made. This is the best Martin Scorsese movie.
It feels like a Scorsese movie.
And David O. Russell made it this year. It's great. I think it's really well. I've actually seen it twice because I actually snuck into a theater after I'd seen another thing to see a late showing. Just because I know we were going to be talking about it, I wanted to remind myself about it. Christian Bale is great. And Jennifer Lawrence, for however old she is, 23? Oh, my gosh. She just nails these characters so well. That and Silver Linings, brilliant. Bradley Cooper's good. And Amy Adams is good. It's funny. I thought the story when I read about Abscam after it was actually slightly closer to reality than I thought the movie was going to be. I think it's a great movie. It's actually funny in a lot of ways. It captures a moment in a period. And David O. Russell, I think, should win something. I'm not so sure that this should, in my mind, would trump 12 Years a Slave. But American Hustle is a great film, and I think it actually might win for this year. But no, I think it's the movie I wish Martin Scorsese had made this year.
Our reviewer, John Anderson, said this is a movie that truly earns the kind of American hustle. You know, you have these movies where they're trying to be kind of epic films by using that title, like whether it's American Psycho or American Gothic, the painting, American Beauty. Right. But he said American Hustle, about, you know, the American, you know, trying to get one over, you know, trying to play somebody. He said this is part of the American DNA in some way. So, and this is what this movie is. Everybody's trying to get over on the other person. Mm-hmm. And
the government's trying to get on over people, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's all these games being played. And not until the end do you realize who's playing who. And I think he also, John Anderson, compared it kind of to like a movie like The Sting, which was also like that. You know, all these little scams that are going on.
Con movies
that you don't. So it's in that tradition. So I'd like to watch it again just because there are certain things that, because it's a David O. Russell movie, he's having fun with the characters. And you don't realize there are plot pieces being put together because you're just kind of having fun with the filmmaking. But there are certain things that are happening underneath the surface that the second time you might start to see.
There are certain scenes in there that I think will be trotted out 10 years from now between Jennifer Lawrence and Christian Bale. One scene in the bedroom, especially, because she's such an out there character and he's such an interesting character. There's some great, great moments in it.
Yeah, there's a scene where there's some Led Zeppelin song playing or something, and she's cleaning the house and she's just going nuts.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah. No,
she's great. She's amazing. She's almost, you know, from another world, how good she is.
The only other thing I'd like to say about it, as a piece of filmmaking in terms of the way he's telling the story, it seems he's original. I mean, it is like Scorsese, but he's doing new stuff too. Like every so often, he'd take two steps forward and then a step back, and so it's quicker than it's more clever than your standard kind of like before and after type storytelling. He's looping things in a very clever way.
Well, those are our nominated films for Best Picture. One of the things I actually am against the sort of multiple nominations. I think five is a lot better.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is it makes these podcasts a lot longer and more difficult to get through.
I will say that I think this is a very strong year. I think these, I mean, maybe not all of them would have made my list, but I think it would have been hard to get this list down to five.
So that brings me to our final question, which we ask every year.
Yeah.
What do you think will win and what should win?
I think what should win is 12 Years a Slave. I think what might win is American Hustle.
I think I'd probably agree with that. I mean, I think the only thing I would add is that Philomena is getting a huge push. At least, I think it's the Weinsteins who put it out. So they're doing their normal huge push at the end. You're seeing it like on the cover of the New York Times, they're taking out ads. So people are, there's some suggestions that maybe there could be a dark horse here. That, you know, maybe 12 Years a Slave and American Hustle would split votes and a third film could come out.
Yeah, I think one of those, 12 Years a Slave or American Hustle, is probably the lead. I think Philomena, it seems too much like a small movie to me to win, but
right. Yeah,
it could be a dark horse.
Well, the one thing we've talked about in the past and might be good for Bill and I to chat about is just like if there's a movie out there or a performance that is not on the list that people really should see.
How did Inside Llewyn Davis not get nominated?
Yeah.
I didn't like the movie at all. I'm glad it didn't get nominated, but if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it has like a 90%+ score.
And it's the Coen brothers who seem to be favorites of the Academy.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be interested in your take as a musician about the musician lifestyle and that time. Is that a period that fascinates you?
Contrary, I was not alive in 60. I wasn't around.
No, just as a musician, just
playing
as,
music in the village. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like a lot of their movies, I think it's very, very deftly done and well done, and the performances are well done, and they capture that moment. I've said it before. I find the Coen brothers to be brilliant filmmakers. For whom I don't care about their they don't move me except for A Serious Man, the movie about the Jewish family out in Minnesota, which I thought was brilliant. I think they're brilliant filmmakers. My nephew, who's a big movie fan, I think I've said this before, once said that he read in a book about directors that the Coen brothers and Quentin Tarantino know far more about film than they know about real life. And I think there's a certain hothouse way of that, where Paul Thomas Anderson is a filmmaker that I just love what he does. I'm kind of glad. But I think they're great filmmakers who I just think are off in their own little insular world sometimes. But no, there's some good music in it, and it definitely captures 1962 or whatever when the folk music thing was, younger people were doing it. Bob Dylan was coming up, and yeah, it's well done. John Goodman is always great.
Yeah.
And again, it's a journey film. It's like another Odyssey film. It's like, you know, what was the film? Brother Where Art Thou,
yes.
Which was the Odyssey story.
And Blue Jasmine, I know you've seen that one, but that's another movie that with Cate Blanchett. I think she's going to win.
If she doesn't win, she'll be. She's
robbed. Amazing in that movie.
She's amazing. I thought that was actually a contender for Best Picture. I'll let you talk afterwards, but I was going to say something I just saw the other night that I was surprised how much I liked. It was Rush by Ron Howard in terms of a character study and also visually. You know, it reminded me a little bit of sort of Apollo 13 that he did. You know, visually he has a really interesting style and it's very fluid. It's very inviting. And you know, for someone who doesn't give two hoots about Formula One racing, but who does remember the James Hunt, Niki Lauda story in the 1970s? It was very compelling, and as soon as it's like a race, you sign up, and it's just, it kind of takes you. So I think that the guy Daniel Brühl we've been talking about was in The Fifth Estate, should have gotten some sort of nomination. But what do you think, Tim? Anything was overlooked?
No, I mean, I think I saw all these movies, so I was very focused this year on seeing all the Best Picture nominees. So that's all I could afford to see.
No, Blue Jasmine, she did a great performance, although I have to admit a conversation is coming up with some friends. Is I still go to Woody Allen films, and it's interesting to think about, you know, as a great art. I mean, it's certainly the artist is separate from his art, but given the recent sort of allegations and the brouhaha, which is very confusing, it's funny how it just reminds you and does taint for me the experience, not of Cate Blanchett's great acting, but of watching this great director's work. It's interesting. I don't know if you have any of those thoughts about that.
I mean, I go back and forth. I'm just following it on Twitter and all the back and forth. It's incredibly complicated.
There was a very unusual and kind of unusually disturbing article in the New Republic this week that said that he was not sort of stating opinion. He was saying that the fact is that people tend to forget, you know, what happened, what these directors have done and what artists have done. And in a sense, his point is sort of, in the end, it doesn't matter to consumers of art, you know, to people who watch movies or look at paintings or read books. And his point was, in a sense, it doesn't matter because the people will just sort of look at the movie as it is. I found that very disturbing as well. And I've often said this is way off the topic, but someone like Roman Polanski, there's another one, you know, how how dark some of his past is, and people are still watching his movies. So probably a question for another day.
Exactly. Well, thanks to you both, and thank you, Father Jimmy. You did a good job keeping us on schedule, so you'll be on for next year. Yeah.
Great.
Thanks to you all.
See ya.
Thank you.